What is happening? Welcome to another episode of The Craft. My name is Nick Pollock, and joining me is special guest for, you know, I guess it's just the second time this year he's come onto the show. It's Eno Saris. Eno, it's great to see you, buddy.
You barely know me at all.
I know. Barely know you. So tell me, how you been? What's been going on?
I've been doing great. Today, we just released the new version of Stuff Plus, just a really quick insight into what we changed. The last model was one model that took in, you know, pitch specs and spit out everything from swings to takes to called strikes to home runs. That's a lot of a model to ask. So we split it into sub models. So there's a swing model, a take model, a foul ball model, a ball in play model. And so you can kind of tweak each of those models and come out with better results. We also put in arm angle, like with the shoulder, the arm slot thing that Savant just put out. And that was better than release point by itself, because you can get to the same release point with different mechanics, with different sort of arm slots. So
that's pretty cool.
So arm slot is in there. We also just put our finger on the scale for lefties. Because no matter what you do, if you treat lefties and righties like, you know, as the same, there are fewer lefties. So hitters see lefties less often. So lefties have a little bit just of this, like, they're better than the model says they will be because people are unfamiliar with them. So we just put our finger on the model a little bit to help lefties to kind of bring them up. We changed the way we do fastballs a little bit because everybody has multiple fastballs now. And we had to, like, deal with that. So one of the things we did was we used to define secondaries off of the shape of the fastball. We don't do that anymore. All that matters about the fastball is it's a velo.
Oh, interesting.
So they have to time to that velo.
Yeah. Huh. So essentially like a fastball that has a similar movement profile to like a changeup or so.
That won't be as effective as much. And I think specifically one guy who really jumped was Skeens, because if you take the shape of his fastball and you then, which isn't maybe super ideal, and then you start to define all of his secondaries off of the shape of that sort of cascades, right?
Sure.
Whereas he throws 99, and you know, and also the splinker, is the splinker a fastball or changeup? This model doesn't care anymore.
Right.
Because the old model would be like, oh, well, if you call it a changeup, it's too hard. If you call it a fastball, you know, it's not a great movement or whatever it is. So this one is just like, no, that's a pretty good pitch. So Skeens was one of the biggest risers with, thank God, because he used to have like 101 Stuff Plus. And you're just like, no, dude, no.
Yeah, absolutely not. there is actually a guy that I would ask about it, but we might be brought up in this podcast today. And because we are going to do starting pitcher sleepers. Who doesn't want that? You know, I want it.
Yeah,
that's my favorite thing. It's literally my favorite thing to talk about in all of the preseason.
Oh my God.
You know,
I love it. Yeah.
It's so fun. And you can all argue
about the top of the rankings, but the bottom is. The
best. Well, that's the thing about it too. You know, I think we're both guilty, but I certainly am. I'm sure you are. Is we get so excited about these guys who no one thinks about actually doing something good for a moment, that we'd say, oh my gosh, we're like so excited for you, maybe you will be something, that then people are like, you told me you like this guy. I'm like, no, we didn't really want to draft him, but like we just kind of feel that he could be good, and that's so cool. Out of nowhere, no one was talking about him, and it could be
I got like, I was like the Joe Boyle guy, and I was like, yeah, I drafted him in the 45th round a couple of times. But I mean, that's not to evade our, we're it's part of our job too, is to unearth these guys. And you're not going to have even a 50% rate when you're talking about guys who are maybe not even a rotation yet.
You know, definitely not.
When we is that the type of sleeper we're talking about? We're not talking about, as, you know, like a top 50, top 75 guy. We're talking about maybe 75 to 100, 75 to 150 guys who are maybe the sixth starter or the fifth starter that we think could be better than that. And so, yeah, you're going to fail on some of those.
Yeah. Oh no, that's really the fun of it too. And also for a lot of these fantasy leagues, like for me, I focus on 12s, and I think every single sleeper I'm going to mention, I'm not drafting. I'm more of actually just circling saying, look, them, or... this is someone who you should be aware of, that maybe if they actually do something in the spring that makes us interested, we could consider it. And then we follow it and we say, okay, cool, we are aware of this player, so that if they are progressing the right way, they become someone we add in season. Not, I'm going to get it. And then maybe some of these guys, I'm like, this is a 15 team sleeper. If I'm in a 15 team league, like, I'm going to get volume out of this guy. I'll draft in my guillotine league for the pitcher list, wacky leagues, which is so fun. Oh my God, guillotine leagues are the best. But I'm going to keep us tight today, you know? Keep it tight, right. Okay?
Keep it tight, yep.
And we're going to start with the NL East. We're going to aim to also do the AL East today. So we're going to have two of them. You know us, we talk about 20 million pitchers, but we're going to go by team. And we're going to identify who we think is a sleeper per team. So I'm going to let you start here with the Washington Nationals.
All right.
And it's funny, Braves, you're also talking about lefties.
Going backwards or something?
I'm going backwards. I got to throw people a curve. Everyone's used to the breakdowns of like, oh, it starts with A, Atlanta. No, we're going to go Nationals.
Okay.
All right. Who we got here, Eno?
I think, DJ Hertz is actually... he does have something going for him, which is a really good changeup. The thing that he has going against him is really bad command.
Mm-hmm.
But command is one of those things that can go in and out. And last year, just to be as an example, he had a 9% walk rate, 9.4% walk rate, which tied for the best he ever had at any level in the minor leagues. So maybe it's going to go the wrong way this year. Or maybe there was better coaching in the major leagues where they're having him throw to spots that he can command to better than they were doing in the minor leagues.
Right.
But for whatever reason, if he just repeated throwing a 28% strikeout rate and a 9% walk rate like he did last year, he would have sort of a high 3 ERA and a bunch of strikeouts and be a useful pitcher.
Man, everyone keeps talking about DJ Harris, and I was actually joking about that because you just talked about your stuff. Plus and changing based on how okay lefties are all right. And I was even thinking in my head, oh, should I make a DJ Hers joke right now? Because now like we'll all like DJ Hers. And everyone was talking about him in PitchCon, and I feel like I'm the only one who's not in on DJ Hers, and maybe I should.
You
I just don't buy
like
that the changeup command is good enough.
You thought last year's like kind of the high watermark for it. That's about
the four seamer to me shouldn't be that good. But I could be so wrong about that. And so DJ Harris is a very interesting one. I'm going a little deeper. I'm thinking about my 15 team Tobys. And I don't think that Michael Soroka gets enough attention for him finally getting the open door to say, like, look, you can now start for the most part. It's a six man as of now. Trevor Williams also there at the end of this one, Jake Irvin, Mitchell Parker and Mackenzie Gore. But Michael Soroka was a 20-year-old who surprised us, looked like a veteran when he first came up with Atlanta. And now the Nationals have added him in. It's the perfect, like, okay, we're not going to win a lot of games. Maybe they will. Maybe that offense is that good. But we just need to fill in some arms here. Okay, Soroka, we know that you've started in the past. It's going to be fine. And watch Soroka take the number five spot and have the command that he used to have and somehow spit out like a 390 ERA with a 121 whip or something like that. And everyone goes, oh, man, here's 10 wins from Soroka. That was so great. I could absolutely see that happening. And also, Mitchell Parker's kind of interesting. He has extension. And maybe that slider is real.
I'm a little bit into Parker, but Soroka, his slider is really weird.
Yeah.
He throws his slider 82 miles an hour with power curve type movement. it's a little bit like another way of saying it, maybe like an 82 mile an hour gyro slider. The reason I'm bringing up 82 a lot is that's bad velo, especially for a gyro slider, especially for that movement. That movement profile, other guys throw at 88. I'm not saying he should throw at 88 because he might break, but that's kind of a weird slider. He was a guy that kind of came up with a great sinker and changeup, has worked really hard to make his fastball workable, and in relief, it worked. But I think it's one of those things where it really only worked in relief, and I'm not sure it's all going to put back together again as a starter. I think the lost guy that we've all forgotten about is Cade Cavalli. Mostly I'm just going to call back to the fact that he was a first-round pick that had some really great stops in the minor leagues, and yes, his command wasn't great in the first part, and it may not be great this year because he's coming back off of Tommy John. But, you know, he could be somebody that over the course of this year, or even now, is a stash in a dynasty league. Because maybe he gets that command going in year two, and maybe next year he kind of puts together what has produced really great strikeout rates in the minors. And even in the majors when he was really struggling, he got some whiffs. So I think there's a good breaking ball in there. There's good velo, and at some point he might put it together. I'm not sure it's this year. This is a little bit more of a dynasty sleeper.
Sure. All right. I'm going to keep it tight. I have so many thoughts, and I'm going to keep it tight.
Yeah.
We're going to move on to the next team here. Yes, I am going backwards, which means we're going to go to the Philadelphia Phillies. And there is a part of me that wants to say, like, Christopher Sanchez isn't getting enough respect, especially if he does get that cutter added that he hinted at, which I thought was like, oh.
I think Christopher Sanchez got a baby Sandy Alcantara there.
A little bit. And yeah, he did increase velocity on the sinker last year. There's a lot of actually interesting conversation about, does that help or hurt?
He's got a new pitch. What would you
but that right is the cutter is what I'm guessing.
Yeah,
for that
it's cutter.
Yeah, because it's the year of the cutter. You know,
it's also he only throws a sinker, and like he needs something he can sometimes throw against righties that's not the sinker.
And he also started to move more towards jamming lefties with that sinker instead of staying right away from them like he did in 2023, which is great.
That's how you're supposed to use a sinker now.
I know, and I couldn't believe it in 2023 that he did that.
Yeah.
What are you doing?
But his projected strikeout rates are pretty bad.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, I understand. He's at 20% strikeout rate. But the thing is, normally we do see better than that as a changeup guy to righties with an amazing changeup. And Sanchez's whole thing is about efficiency. He was actually one of the best at pitches per out in 2023, I believe, and pretty good at an out percentage in 2024. But with a cutter, it does make it more of a opportunity to go from a 20% to maybe 22 or 23 because of lefties having a much better weapon against them than the current slider, I think actually would make a difference for Sanchez. So at least put him into that, maybe a strikeout inning if we're lucky with Sanchez. And it's obviously a good situation.
One thing I would like to point out too is a lot of people are in weekly leagues. And, you know, he goes really deep into his games. He went 6+ in more than half of his games. And, you know, despite a low strikeout rate in those games where he goes 6+, like he had a game with 10 strikeouts, a game with 8, 5, 9, you know. So, like, he sometimes bulks his way to a decent enough strikeout rate that, you know, his strikeout per week might not be as bad as his, you know, strikeout percentage.
Yeah.
So sometimes I like these. I like to pair these guys because I'm always usually chasing the stuff guys that have great strikeout rates. And, you know, in this case, I think pairing him, I think that's a high probability of a lot of innings and going deep into games. And like you said, being efficient. So I like that point you made about him. I think he's undervalued. I think I like him better than where he's going.
Yeah. The other one that actually is a real sleeper is Moises Chace. I didn't know who this was until Trevor Huth showed him to me at PitchCon. And if you guys don't know it, we did a video of, I think it was the top 25 pitchers for redraft leagues. And I just watched the video with Trevor Huth. And sometimes, like, I used to not do prospects at all. And Trevor would teach me these things. I famously said that DL Hall was going to be better than Mackenzie Gore back in the day. And now I saw Moises Chace on the Phillies. And I love this dude. He's on the 40 man also.
God, look at those strikeout rates.
Yeah, and he pretty much throws hard with a vicious breaking ball and has a flashes plus changeup. And he's control. Like, he actually is someone that can, with his mechanics, he's not someone who flails out. Like, he goes straight to it. I watched him and I go, oh, this guy's amazing.
Walk rates have been a little high.
I don't believe it, honestly. Nice. I like watching it. If I'm like, there are certain times like I watch a pitcher. Like, I watch Kyle Harrison, I was like, no. Or I watch like Hayden Birdsong, I'm like, no. Now I don't believe, you know, it's possible that Kyle Harrison, he's 23 and that fixes, you know, and he changes that. Mm-hmm. But watching him, you know, watching him deliver a baseball was just like, oh yeah, no, this is what it's supposed to be. It's straight. It's to it. I'm enamored by Moises Chace. He was only 4 starts in AA last year. And he might be there a little bit this year, but Painter's going to be waiting until July. And after that, like, I feel as if the Phillies are going to call on Moises Chace this year. and I'm a fan.
Just wanted to point out that Jesus Luzardo has probably what looks like a B minus or C plus health grade for me, using Jeff Zimmerman's health grades. So I know that you just said that Painter is not going to be available to July, and so maybe he's just going to be part of a Fabopalooza this year. But in draft and holds where you don't have free agency, I think he's actually not a bad pickup. I think he will still get you maybe 70, 75 innings this year, and they could be ace-type innings. I think there's a high probability that either Jesus Luzardo or somebody else is hurt. I mean, that's just how Major League Baseball works these days.
Oh, Luzardo. Oh, man. Yeah.
Luzardo specifically. There's
the worst about extension. Worst extension.
And fluctuating fastball velos and a history of health problems. Something
not fun. We are going now to New York to the Mets, and give these guys something to love, because this is a very interesting pitching staff. They went out and got Soto, and it's like, oh cool, we're the Mets, baby, hit me a home run. And it's just, the staff is weird. It's a strange assessment or a collection of starters where I don't know. I mean, I guess it's Kodai Senga is the ace. Is it Sean Manaea? Is it, I don't know. Is there a definitive sleeper? They're like, okay, push all these guys aside. This is the one that I feel like we're all going to be talking about.
Clay Holmes, maybe.
Yeah. I love that pick.
Listen, the other guys are all going to be usable at home. It's a really good, nice home park. Kodai Senga is the ace if he can stay healthy, you know, but he almost basically didn't pitch last year. So I don't know how many innings, who's going to get you more innings, Clay Holmes or Kodai Senga is a legit question. And if Clay Holmes gets more innings than Kodai Senga and may pitch as well, that's the arm talent that Clay Holmes has. I mean, he has a top 10 sinker in the game. And of course, that'll be a little bit worse as he has to stretch out. But I also believe that he can put together the cutter or four seam that we've already seen a little bit. We've seen him throw it a little bit, and you saw it in the playoffs a little bit. And so the quality of that, you know, cutter and four seam that we've seen in bits is way better than it was when he was a prospect. And I think the advanced coaching that we've got now will coach him into it won't be an average four seam even or cutter, but it might be just below average. And that might be good enough because his sweeper, his gyro, and his sinker are all kind of elite level. So I think he has what it takes. And when we're talking about innings, where he's being taken around guys that I have projected for 130 innings. And Clay Holmes, I have projected for 110 innings. At that point, where he's going in drafts, you're not taking 180 inning guys. And so that's the difference with him and Kodai Senga. It's where you're taking Kodai Senga, you're taking him against guys like Kodai, you might take ahead of Christopher Sanchez, and I have Christopher Sanchez down for 180 innings or 173 or whatever. So I think that's where Holmes goes, the innings stuff becomes. And then I don't really like Paul Blackburn or Griffin Canning that much.
No.
And I like Tyler Megill some, but Brandon Sproat's a pretty good pitching
that's
prospect.
That's my pick is Brandon Sproat.
There you go. Tell me a little bit about Sproat.
Yeah, he throws 96, 97. It's not the greatest shape ever, but it's fine enough. And he attacks his own with it well. And it's a fantastic slider off of it. He also has a bridge cutter too. We haven't seen too much data for AAA starts, but generally I'm just like, oh yeah, no, this is a pitcher that's better than, I see this guy and go, yeah, he could replace maybe two or three of these guys on the Mets even right now. So we're going to see him this year.
Really weird reduction in strikeout rate in AAA. I mean, he was 33%. You know, in A ball and double A, and then 16% in triple A. But
I'm going to likely say that's either the small sample or getting an adjustment to seven starts.
Seven starts. And on top of it, it's the ABS. The in triple A, he is going up against the robot zone. So there may just be some part, maybe he's a guy who lives high in the zone in a place where umps would give it to him and the ABS wouldn't. So, we saw Jared Jones struggle in AAA a little bit with ABS and laugh that right off. So I think maybe Sproat's behind. I think Megill gets the first chance. I think Canning and Blackburn are the spot start guys. If there's a big injury, I think McGill gets the first shot at sort of replacing a big injury.
Yeah, McGill's an extension guy who just can't quite put it together. And it's so close to me of you just got to get the four seamer upstairs and you have this cutter that can work. But we see he starts where it just doesn't click for him and he goes off of the cutter. He's trying it early, doesn't work, he moves on. Or the slider isn't that great.
You see his brother like dominating relief and you just know that like at any point in like how much time he has on the Mets and how many options he has, like he has one option this year, so he can be depth in the minors. Mm-hmm. But next year, if he hasn't proven that he's a starter this year, next year he might be a reliever.
Right. Right. And then he's doing a low arm angle. I'm just kidding. all right. We're going to now move to the Marlins and Atlanta to close off the NL East. But before we do that, we're going to take a quick break. So, Eno, I know that the Marlins, not really the place to go searching for wins, but there might be a guy or two to target, and I'm going to let you have fun with the hard changeup guy. I have to imagine he's your sleeper.
I mean, I just, when I look down below, their vaunted system is not producing prospects. I don't really like Beozo. I don't like Mazur or Robbie Snelling, the former Padres guys. I don't like Xavion Curry. So the kind of like depth guys I don't really like. I like Sandy Alcantara. Weathers is okay. Cabrera is the guy, though, that still has, you know, the opportunity to make it. And what you see, if you look at oopsie projections on Fangraphs, are projections that are powered by Stuff Plus. So it's an easy way to see, like, oh, how might Stuff Plus affect a guy? And with oopsie, despite the fact that Cabrera had a 1.4 home run rate last year, that is the noisiest thing that a pitcher can do. Home run rate is one of the noisiest stats.
Yeah.
It's I don't know why. I guess you could do just give up two or three home runs in a couple games.
And that changes just, things. Yeah.
Yeah, it changes it a lot. And so oopsie's projecting because of his stuff. I mean, it's a power change, power fastball, power slider. It's big power stuff. He's projecting a 0.93. That's Jordan Rosenblum, a 0.93 home run rate, whereas everybody else is over 110 and even some are at 1.2. So that's the only thing you have to change in his projections, basically, to make him a high threes ERA guy with lots of strikeouts. And I think there's also just a use case for a lot of leagues where you just play him at home. His home splits are, like, not surprisingly, pretty good, Miami. And so these are boring reasons. The exciting reason is that, oh, that power change and that power fastball and like that power arsenal he's got. That's the exciting reason. The boring reason is worst case scenario, you can use him at home. You know, there's even his projections are decent. So, you know, I like Edward Cabrera.
So the thing about Edward Cabrera I like the most is that he has a pitch that he should be throwing more. And that's a slider. Mm-hmm. I've seen this. This is a great gyro slider that kind of almost acts like a cutter that 89. When you're throwing this hard, it works and it has worked. It just doesn't throw it enough. And I have also watched him try and work his four seamer in there by force. And he doesn't have enough strike rates on that. He's not consistent enough with it. And this slider to me could be the, oh, hey, cool. I'm just going to throw this in here too. That should work really well. I am going to be looking at Edward Cabrera in the spring saying, are you throwing this slider? Like, are you actually going to do it this time? And if so, I think you'll see the walk rates go down in the spring. That's actually one of the more interesting things about the spring that you can do is walk rates generally are very helpful, especially for high walk guys in the past. I know Joe Boyle had like two games.
BB, other than stuff, K-minus BB is like the strongest small sample thing. So even though it's, you know, and I think that's overrated about spring is like people are like, oh, quality of competition. Actually, you know, when the bad players play for the most part, I know there are some games where it's different. Mostly the good players play for the first five innings and then the prospects and the young guys play the next four innings. We see them in spring. You see all the veterans walk out. In the fifth inning, it's like the weirdest thing in spring.
Hey, there's a good takeout down the road, you know.
Yeah, you just see them walk out because a lot of times the door out to the parking lot is like on the wall. So they'll like just walk out. You're like, oh, see you later, Mike Trout. I guess, guys, do you want to go?
Oh, my God.
But yeah, so I think there are some split squad games. And so it is a little bit, but you can look at K-BB. I think you can look at K-BB for batters and pitchers and to some extent ground ball rates. So.
Yeah, it's so I'm definitely been looking for that from Eric Cabrera.
If he does have that, you like one of those depth guys, do you?
I'm curious about Ryan Weathers. I know it sounds crazy, and I thought I was so out on Ryan Weathers. I was like, no, not a chance. But then I kind of realized that he actually has a changeup that can be legitimate against the right-hander. And when you are a lefty with that Flirts was sitting 96. And you have a changeup that at times is like a 20% swing strike rate pitch against a righty with a 60%+ strike rate, that can get you very far. It's just about, cool, what are you doing against lefties? And honestly, Ryan Weathers has the tools. He has a sinker. Just please throw that inside to lefties as opposed to away. And his breaking ball needs to be a little bit more refined to be more of that whiff pitch down and away to lefties as well. But when you tell me that there's a guy who actually has the tools to be good enough against right-handers, that's often a reason for them to get regular starts and to be okay in the majors, which tells me, okay, you have that. Here are the things you can improve upon. And if you actually do that against lefties, then hold on a second. There is a fantasy relevant starter all of a sudden. So we've seen him make tweaks before and improve. Like last year, we saw him with more vert and a better four seamer out of nowhere. Now, health-wise, all that kind of stuff, absolutely. I'm not thinking about really volume at this point because we're not considering them at all for our draft. So why would we be considering them for the entire season if we ever pick them up? But I'm going to be at least watching Ryan Weathers to see how he's using his sinker against lefties and that slider. And hopefully that changeup can continue to be a reliable pitch for him against righties.
Yeah, he has tightened the slider. And, you know, made it harder and then separate it into a slider and sweeper. You know, so he's got two different breaking balls. He's added an inch of ride to the four seam over when he first came up. And he's diversified his fastball mix by throwing the sinker and the four seam. He's also pushed his velo from 93 up to 95.9 last year for the four seam. I am a little worried that he's throwing pretty close to his max now, and he's basically on the like make it or bust level of his career, where he's just throwing as hard as he can to stay in the major leagues. But again, useful at home with the building blocks, and he's pushed that stuff plus on that four seam from 88 up to 95, so it's just below average now. And he's got two good secondaries, the changeup and slider. So I think, or maybe three good secondaries with the two sliders. So I like Weathers. I'm surprised, but I think he also deserves a lot of kudos for sort of pushing his arsenal this far.
I was so surprised. I was like, I'm not supposed to like this guy. What is this? We're going to move to Atlanta now, and I'm going to steal the first one here. I'm going to steal the real estate broker himself.
No,
come on. I mean, Grant Holmes. I'm such a fan. I love that you knew who that was. That's great. And look, it's very simple, guys. He's the number four right now with Ian Anderson as a five, who also maybe we do talk about.
And this is with Strider on the IL.
Strider on the IL, right. But out of the gates, I mean, the way that Grant Holmes is going in drafts right now is just kind of like not touched much. You can pretty much get him for free in 12 teamers at the moment. And Grant Holmes has two whiff pitches. I mean, you talked about it with him on the Athletics versus Atlanta, learning a new one. And I'll let you talk about that in a second. But also what I love so much about Grant Holmes, he has good fastball command. Mm-hmm. He doesn't just have a fastball that's just bad, like, oh, I guess I got to throw this in the zone. He actually locates it effectively and has two pitches to get strikes and whiffs with on a winning ball club. And I see all of the recipes here of just like, oh yeah, I get it. They could toy around with Grant Holmes last year. They had lots of options. They don't have as many good guys to go for. Not to mention with Strider on the IL, yes, but you also have Chris Sale there. You also have Ian Anderson. You also have Reynaldo Lopez. And it just seems as if there are injury risks abound. And this is the kind of time for Grant Holmes to just have a rotation spot and then never need to give it up as well. So I'm a huge fan of Grant Holmes entering this year.
Yeah, one little piece of analysis that sometimes goes by the wayside when it comes to analyzing pitchers and roster situations or, you know, players for the current year that I just want to put on people's radar in this case is options. And so Grant Holmes and Ian Anderson have been around a while. They don't have any options.
Great call.
If the Braves, you know, put them in the mind or like want to get them off the roster, they have to lose them. They have to DFA them. Now, like, I don't love Ian Anderson, but I do think that the Braves would want to keep him around as long as possible. And Grant Holmes, they both don't have options. So in this case, you know, I think that injury will just figure it out. So for the first part of the season, they're both in. And then maybe Sale has to take a break or Lopez has had to take breaks. And so then they're both in there. Maybe, you know, one of them goes to the pen. But I honestly just like Holmes better than Anderson. So even if they're playing games to try and keep Anderson or Holmes on the roster, I figure that Holmes, with the better fastball command and the two breaking balls, the one that he learned in Atlanta, a slider. Atlanta taught him a slider. You know,
what a concept.
Could you have a slide? Have you tried this pitch? It's crazy. It's called the slider. Because they don't have options, it's Smith Shaver and Elder and Waldrip that are going to be up and down guys.
Right.
You know, they have the ability to be optioned. And that's just part. You just have to think about that when you're thinking about who's going to be the fifth starter. Sometimes you're like, oh, it's going to be this exciting guy. And they break camp and no, it's a boring old guy. In this case, we like the boring old guy. Grant Holmes,
yeah,
the president.
And to and just to talk about Ian Anderson a little bit, he was in AAA last year. We have this really fun app with on PL Pro that is just making player cards and PLV assessment of all AAA starters last year. So I'm looking at it at Ian Anderson right now. 7 feet of extension, 92-93 mile per hour velocity, and it's just all north-south like you remember before. It's pretty remarkable. It kind of reminds me a little of Lucas Giolito in the past, of like the Nile of red and green I would see on his strike zone plots. And the main thing that he used to have is a curveball that would show up every so often that he could throw strikes with. It doesn't look like he's figured that out. Last year is like very much in the zone or well underneath the zone. PLV hated it at a 4.33. And this is compared to major leagues. However, the slider had a 5.28. And that might be the surprise for us with Ian Anderson, that the slider, which wasn't really a thing before, that he threw only 14% of the time.
Wacky changeup. He was supposed to be kind of the wacky changeup guy.
Right, that you didn't, I think it was like stuff plus really hated.
Liked. Yeah.
And I think with the changeup, it's 7 feet of extension. And I think it's one of those weird things that we just got to shrug and say deception off the fastball. It just doesn't, they don't know what it is between the two of them. And he masks it really well. But he never had a third option that was effective. Mm-hmm. And the fact that now he has a slider, which, yes, only 13-14% usage for Ian Anderson in AAA last year, was a highly rated pitch from us. I am very curious to see this. And this is at 83. It's not like the cutter at 88 or so. But it does seem to be a more commanded breaker than the curve. And with three pitches like that, Ian Anderson might actually be something here. So both of those guys is certainly it. I mean, of the other ones, AJ Smith-Shaver is going to take too long. Hurston Waldrop's a reliever in my view. Davis Daniel, two first names, no way.
I'm gonna
Bryce
pick
Elder.
One of that group.
Go.
Smith-Shaver.
Yeah. I mean, he's the best one of it. Yes.
He has a good changeup by Stuff Plus. If you look at his sort of movement profile on Savant, you can see that it has unexpected movement. The curve has more drop than you'd expect. It's not rated super highly by Stuff Plus, but I think it's a usable pitch. So two usable pitches and great velo on a poor shape fastball. I think
isn't it poor shape fastball?
I mean, it looks pretty dead zoney to me. I mean, what are we talking about?
Okay,
here?
So wait. So actually, that's good because I've been actually wanting to ask you this question because I don't know it. What would you define as a dead zone fastball? Like what?
Well, he's got 16 inches of IBB, I think.
Okay, 16, and is Armside Break included in that?
Okay, so he has a maybe.
Oh no, I it could be a Dead Zone fastball. I legitimately don't know.
Looks, I mean, there's a pretty cool app that let me see if I can get it open real quick. But there's a pretty cool app called Dynamic Dead Zone that Max Bay put out, and all right. You can just put in their names and generate a visualization, and what it spits out. Is yeah, it's Dead Zone. So what it spits out is a heat map of expected movement given that arm slot, mm-hmm. with then a map of his actual movement on top of it.
Okay,
and you know the middle node basically for what he has is like slightly more arm break than completely Dead Zone. Like
gotcha.
Slightly more arm side break than completely Dead Zone. So, it's pretty Dead Zone. What I would bequeath him if I could is just another fastball. I don't know which one it is. If it's a cutter, I would assume maybe a sinker could do something, but just another fastball so that he can kind of, I think what happens, and you saw him get his butt beat in the playoffs last. Mm-hmm. And I think this, what happens is he needs to, like, he doesn't command that fastball that great. And then, if he gets into a position where he has to throw the fastball in the zone, he kind of throws it middle. You see a lot of middle there or scatter shot in what you're showing right now.
Right.
And so I don't think it's a great fastball. If you had a fastball, you know, in that movement per chart that you've got there, just something, a bridge pitch kind of, maybe a cutter or something, just something that he can throw when they're expecting a fastball, maybe something with a wrinkle on it, right?
Right, because this is a slider at 85, right? This is a changeup at 83, 84. Curveball's big at 76, and then you have the 95 fastball.
Like, what about 88? What about 88 mile an hour?
Yeah, sure. Right.
That he can throw. He can throw that in the middle of the zone, and they think it's the four seam, and at least it's, instead of placata, it's, you know, something on the ground.
You're of the cutter, you know. I'm telling you.
Giving everybody cutters. Everyone gets a cutter.
It should. So what's interesting here is I love that you mentioned the Dead Zone stuff because I like getting that frame of reference. From how I've been going through this, and I'm going to adjust it now, is seeing like 16, I'm like, I don't know if I believe this, like, you know, 15, 5, 16 of that influence. But with Smith Shaver's fastball here, and yes, you are so right about the scatter shot, and that was the thing that really bothered me about him, was that like you don't know where this is going. This is all AAA data here. For Smith Shaver,
look how many the waist pitches, like a foot
over
above
here, all the way in the top arm side, down and tugged by the ankles of lefties, absolutely. Yeah. Is at 95, which is above average, fine. It's not like 96, 97, but you know, I actually remember seeing like upper 90s at times, but you know, release extension above average, 6.7. It's not 6.4 or so. Okay, vert is 16 to 17 above average again, and also the angle. And when you normally see like 16 plus vert, you see it with a steeper attack angle. And a 1.1 isn't saying that this is a flat fastball, like completely, but it isn't the steep one that helps guys up in the zone, right? It's helping him a little. It's all like slightly above average. It's kind of where, like, why I came up with Fan 4 Plus was because, like, what if we take like above average and everything? Is that enough? Or do we need something to be elite from there, right? So I think PLV likes it because it's near 60% zone rate, which is high, even though you see all these waste ones. It's generally filling up the zone. It's filling up every part of the zone, like it's a Mario Paint or Mario Party mini game or something like that. Yeah. And that's not really what you want. So Smith Shaver is very interesting in this way. And I will at least say the 6.7 extension with some velocity at its root, okay, that's not so bad. But I'm curious what we get as he continues to develop. In the minors. Good stuff there, you know. We're going to continue on to the AL East. I'm going to keep it tighter. I messed up. It's on me.
We're behind.
We are so behind. So you're going to take us out of it. We're going to go to the Baltimore Orioles and company, but we're going to do that after this break. Baltimore.
I prepared for
Orioles.
The Yankees, damn it. We went backwards. To the
I know. I'm messing with you. I love this. This
just
is so fun.
Screwing with me.
What would be the Yankees? It would be like the Jays, right? It would be the Jays would be the first one.
I can I just go off script a little bit on
go
this
ahead.
One?
Absolutely.
My sleeper is Grayson Rodriguez.
I was gonna. That was my segue.
It's not because he's not gonna be cheap or like really cheap, but he's cheaper than he should be. That's what I think. Yeah. And the thing that I see with Grayson Rodriguez, we talk a lot about stats, and I tried to do this a little bit on the last episode of The Craft that we did for PitchCon, which was a great success. Congratulations to you and to
the charities you raised money for. It's everybody. They have $13,000 raised for ALS guests. So thank you everyone who tuned in, and the episodes will be on YouTube, I think, by next week. So
my question to you in that one was like, who do you like for reasons that are not necessarily stat reasons, sort of like who do you just like more than maybe you should? And
yeah.
Grayson is kind of one of my answers on that, because I can tell you that he has four pitches with above average stuff, and he's shown above average locations in both of his years, and all that stuff. But what I kind of see here is the thing that's the hardest to do. He's 25 years old. We don't have qualified starters that are 24 and under anymore. We just don't. Mm. It's partly because we don't have qualified starters as much anymore, but it's also because it just takes a long time to become a starter in the league these days. And we watch AJ Smith-Stauber. It may not be this year. And you said it might take a long time. It may take two more years before AJ Smith-Stauber is a starter in the major league. Look at Grant Holmes. It took him until he was like 28. So what I see with Grayson is he's got all the pieces. And I think this year could be the year he puts it all together. Like, he's got what you need, something against lefties, you need something against righties, you need something in the zone, you need something out of the zone. Like, he's got all of those things, and I think he can put it together.
He's missing one piece.
What's that?
The cutter. What do you think it is?
He threw the cutter and it got smacked. If he brings back the cutter in small pieces, what is it?
He doesn't have the velocity band. It's the same thing we're talking about with
is he all hard?
Smith Strawber. The breaker is slower. It's not a hard breaker. So it's like a...
Oh, it's all like, fast or slow. He's 96 or he's 86.
84 or something like that, yeah. Like, he needs that 90, like just that 90 mile per hour cutter in the zone. Because what happens is...
the cutter back and not... He fell in love with it against lefties when he first came up and they were spanking it. But I think if it's more of a show me pitch...
Well, that's fine. I mean, so the thing about the cutter to me is that what happens a lot is that we see starters who get trapped. They get trapped that, like, in a situation, if I don't have this thing, I have to do this other thing.
Yes, that's what he was doing. He's like, oh, I need to throw the cutter now. And then he's going to throw the cutter.
Right. And that's, he does it with his fastball now. So right now, when it comes to strike rate, it's like 67% strike rate. That's cool. But ICR is 40% on that four seamer for Grayson Rodriguez, 41-42 against lefties. And it's just like, oh, no, you need something else to not let them just hang back and crush this thing. And I so feel that should be the cutter, especially even against righties. 47% ICR on this changeup is just no. That shouldn't be the case. 43 on the slider. And if you don't know ICR, that's ideal contact rate, which is, think of it like barrel rate and hard hit rate, but it's all gaps, the whole spectrum of things that are good for the hitter, not just the ultimate crushed ones, like the solid ones. Those are still bad for the pitcher. And you want to prevent those as much as possible. So you want to see like 30, 35% on those secondary pitches. And to see them well over above 40 for righties is pretty much telling me that he needs something else that's slow, slower than the fastball, that's effective inside the zone than these, which should be whiff pitches. I feel like he's so close to it. I guess
the one thing that's kind of a flaw for him too, and I'd like guys to have good sliders.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and his slider's not his best pitch. He's a curve change guy. But, you know, sometimes Max Fried learned the slider later. You know, sometimes these curveball guys take a while. Sometimes they don't. You know, Adam Wainwright never had a good slider.
Yeah.
You know, so there's some... Charlie Morton never had a really good slider.
You want to know a stat? You want to know a fun stat?
What's that?
The cutter against lefties last year for Grayson Rodriguez. 86% strike rate, 57% swing strike rate.
Wow.
He threw seven.
And slugging.
He threw seven of them.
And slugging?
He did not allow a home run. He allowed
it wasn't
one.
Last year that he had the problem with it. It was the first year when he first came up.
Yeah.
He was in love with it.
Yeah.
So he maybe also allowed a home run to found out how to use it last year, just every once in a while.
I just want him to do it. I just want him to do it so badly.
I want to give Rodriguez just a tiny bit of love. We need to be fast to this, dude.
I know.
My tiny bit of love for Cade Povich. Because on his prospects report, he had at Fangraphs, he had a 55 future command. I mean, this is the weird part, but he just like, he looks like a lefty command guy.
I know. So like, I know.
He had really tiny walk rates in parts of the minors. So I'm saying his future is large arsenal and he throws, three fastballs, you know?
So yes. He needs to be Max Fried. Exactly what he looks like. He just needs that changeup to really work out against righties and you're good.
Because none of his fastballs are good. And so he'll never be Max Fried because he's 2 miles an hour slower and his fastballs aren't as good.
Flight and everything to it, yeah.
But, you know, like a budget Max Fried is possible. And oops, he has a 4.18 projection. So if that's useful in your league or ERA, you know, the price has come down. And I think he was miscast as a top starter. I never really felt that. But now, if you can recast him in your head as like large arsenal, crafty lefty guy, I think you can probably see some places where he makes sense for you.
Yeah, I hope Kate Povich doesn't turn into Max Cooked. That'd be bad. Now, Albert Suarez is someone I would at least know about because he is the long reliever right now on the squad who made 24 starts in 32 games last year. And look, there are times when Albert Suarez has things working. A fastball that he leans into and then change up and slider. And we saw him be productive, 370 ERA in that time, 133 innings for Suarez. I'm not saying that you should draft him and this is it, stash him. But be aware of Albert Suarez because it wouldn't surprise me if he gets more starts.
Yeah.
One of those guys. I'm not really in on Tomoyuki Sugano. Seems like just too much of a pitch to contact guy. So
89 miles an hour with an 18% strikeout rate in Japan. I just don't think
I just can't do that. We're going to move on. We're going to move on to the Toronto Blue Jays. And as I just keep throwing a curveball at you, which is really fun. I'm just enjoying it too much, you know.
Any sense after the Baltimore Orioles? What?
I know. I know. I just said it was just been the AL East. I didn't say the order that we would. Okay. Fine. I'm so sorry.
Francis,
you know,
better than the projections do.
You like him more.
Yeah, and one Why? Of the reasons I have this, there's these new stats on Baseball Prospectus that are pretty cool that are the arsenal stats. Mm-hmm. And Bowden Francis has the biggest spread of movements in the big leagues.
Really?
Because he has that huge curveball.
Yeah.
And then he has a fastball that rides, and he actually doesn't mm-hmm. throw that hard. So his pitches have more time to move. So that's cheating, you know, but it's true. Yeah. And I think that it does just speak to the fact that like, if you dissect him and you say, well, he has a 102 stuff less four seam, a 102 stuff less splitter, a 105 stuff less curveball, 87 stuff less slider, 82 stuff less sinker. You're like, this is pretty meh, you know, but actually mm-hmm. if you then think about, hey, these are five average pitches that he now throws, you know, fairly often that have a huge spread. What he should get is a reduction in swing rates. And what do you have? A guy who's in the zone all the time and has a tiny walk rate. And if you can actually, he actually wants people not to swing. He's one of the few swingers, pitchers that would prefer you not to swing.
Sure.
And what happens, what we've seen with the research is the bigger the difference is in movement, the more likely you get a non-swing.
Chris Bassett.
Think about it. Yeah, Chris Bassett. But also think about curveballs. Big curveballs have the lowest swing rates.
Right.
Because the hitter's like, whoa, that's not going to be in the zone. So if you can land a big curveball in the zone, which this guy has proven he can, I think he's going to be a guy that has low swinging strike rates, but decent strike rates based on called strikes.
See, stubby, baby.
He's going to have a little bit of an elevated home run rate, maybe.
Yeah.
It's not dominating stuff.
I mean, I think last year what really happened was the four-seamer's ICR was just so low. And I still don't quite understand it. And I think you might be explaining it there because of all the different movements and everything, batters aren't locked in to that heater as much.
It could be dangerous.
Yeah, I'm not, a little less bullish on the secondaries and the quality mm-hmm. of them. And I think it might be something that batters are going to tune in to that heater more this year. And I'm a little afraid of that. The low 90s, and he does get ride, but it's not the most ride. It's a little questionable to me, but again, this is like DJ Hurs. A lot of people are in on Bowden Francis, and It's easily one that I could just be missing completely here. My old joke is I prefer Bates over Bowden, but that's just me. I'm going to say Max Scherzer. Max Scherzer, I think, is getting slept on. I know that sounds crazy, but Max Scherzer is, I don't know, he's had one season since 2010 with an ERA over four, and that was 2011. He has one season above a 115 whip since 2015. And I think it's a case where he's going to be productive when he does play. And if he isn't, he just stops playing.
Which is okay. That's actually better than maybe a Bowden Francis who may just struggle and
they just and keep him in there throughout the year or something.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly. Yeah.
But I guess what I'm getting at is Max Scherzer is just kind of not drafted or very much at the very end of drafts at the moment. And the way I see it is he's going to come out probably looking like his best self of the year.
And maybe you don't have him at the end of the year. Maybe you have
And then you don't have him at the end of the year. That's right. But this is the end of your draft. You shouldn't be, I'm thinking more so for 12 teamers here, but
I'd like
after pick 150, you should not expect anybody to be on your team by the end of the year. That's just how it is.
That's a good point. What's the pick number?
And his number, he's drafted.
What's the pick
after,
number after which you don't expect?
Like 150 or so in 12 teamers.
I've seen the percentages drop. You're like, there's a point at which it's below 50% that they're on your roster.
And you should actually be planning for this. You should draft your team expecting burn and churn to happen. Because if you don't, that means you're missing out on everyone you want to add on your teams. And
argument for Bowden, though, because it's like you might want to draft for ceiling. And if Bowden is struggling, then you're just dropping him. Whereas Max might alternate.
Will you be able to identify Bowden's struggling easier? Will you be able to make a decision on Bowden Francis quickly?
I don't know. Scherzer has all this like, that's a future Hall of Famer. So you might be like, the stuff is bad, but like, it's Max Scherzer. Do we care about stuff plus?
That's a good point.
I don't know.
Yeah, be disciplined on yourself on if you... You should be drafting guys that you can make quick decisions on. And if you're not at the end of your draft, then you're doing it wrong.
I don't really like Bassett, and I don't really like their depth guys. Jake Bloss is just kind of boring to me.
So speaking of boring, we're going to talk about the Tampa Bay Rays, who actually aren't really that boring. Drew Rasmussen's the easy one in the same context of like,
I mean, I just need to wonder, and that wasn't who's you couldn't figure it out.
That wasn't it. We're moving on.
Next up is so who is the fifth starter when they break camp? Zach Littell or Drew Rasmussen?
Okay. So I still can't believe how many innings Zach Littell threw last year. Like, do you know what it is at the top of your head?
I'm going to guess like 140.
156.
Wow.
Right? 29 starts. And
his most before that was 90.
It can't be. It just can't be. Littell is not a guy that I think is really a starter. And Rasmussen, to me, absolutely should be a starter. It's just like we were just talking about. This is a guy that you draft. If he doesn't start, this is the easiest decision ever. And if he starts, this is the easiest decision ever. Right? Great. So I definitely want Drew Rasmussen. It's a hard cutter with the slider they're just really hard to hit. Fastball as well, that is effective. I think that's a very clear one. I do want to put a whole blanket over the Rays, though, and just say there will be a negative impact pitching in George Steinbrenner Field. I think that's been talked about a lot, but I do want to remind everyone that we know about these high vert numbers from, say, Pepio and from Taj Bradley, etc. They are 1.5 inches higher than a neutral home park.
I tend to still like Pepio the most. I've dropped Bradley a little bit. McClanahan, I'm just, they say that maybe he can get 150 innings. I've got him projected for like 130. Mm-hmm. Shane Boz is going to be hurt by this because he definitely has pristine stuff plus numbers, but I think he had the big home road splits that the other Rays did. And there's something about it where he also, remember our conversation about options? He has two options.
Ooh.
So
that's interesting.
He it could be Littell and Rasmussen, and Boz goes back down to work on things. So,
oh, wow. But his curveball was so good. Yeah, that's a good point, though. I like that.
He did get better over the course of the season, too, Boz did. I mean, the last four starts were his best by Stuff Plus, and you know he kind of got things on the
to that same argument, Rasmussen has two options. And if they're feeling like everybody's ready to go, you might put him.
They could say he's not stretched.
Go stretch him out. Mm-hmm. And then Boz, who figured out the curveball at the end of last year, was feeling like, I'm ready to be a starter. They put him there.
Or Littell is on the roster as a long man sixth starter. The one problem is in their bullpen, they're also short on options. They're actually getting a little tight on options on this pitching staff. And this is important for the Rays, who usually use the injured list and options to kind of have more pitchers than they seem like they are allowed to have. Mm-hmm. And so if Littell and Rasmus, or if Littell has to make it on this team and they want to keep him, then somebody like Mason Montgomery might have to go back down, or Hunter Biggie, who are really exciting. You know, Mason Montgomery and Hunter Biggie. Mason Montgomery, I think, has the 12th best Stuff Plus in baseball.
Yeah, it was on the review, I couldn't believe it. I was looking at this and I go, okay, Mason Montgomery is like, he's on that tier for me of studs prospects who, if they start, you have to add them right now. Yeah. And I hope he does. I hope he does so badly. So that's good for the Rays. We got a little time. We got to move. I'm moving this one. I'd say for both of us, it's Rasmussen as our sleeper. Is there someone else you wanted to mention?
Joe Boyle.
No, stop this. Okay. All right. We're moving.
Okay. Never mind. Move on.
Oh gosh.
If there ever was 10 command on the 20 to 80 scale.
We would give him 5. Okay.
I will say this, though. The pitching coaching is an upgrade. And I would say maybe one of the biggest upgrades in the sport.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, that's a good point.
His move from the Athletics to the Rays.
What's kind of weird is that the shape of the four-seamer isn't that great, though. Like, I thought it was better than what it was. The slider's amazing.
But he throws a really hard slider, and he was like, I've got a sweeper now. And I'm like, you don't need a sweeper.
Stop that. And also make it more obvious from the fastball to the sweeper.
Find the zone first.
So Red Sox. The interesting thing there is that you have 5 guys who are in there and Lucas Giolito. Is there someone that you think that might or is getting overlooked here in Boston?
Well, I liked your thing about how, you know, last week about how Giolito says he's ready to go. He could be, you know, you could give him 170 innings, maybe, you know, why they're not going to treat him with kid gloves. One thing that I did notice is that there are 6 starters here that most teams would want to have in the major leagues. Cutter Crawford does have an option, but he's like seems to be too good to option. Tanner Houck, you know, again, has an option, but you're really going to option Houck, Cutter, or Bayo? So yeah, I wonder if this is going to be a 6-man rotation. That's a way that you can maybe keep Crochet. And let's say you have aspirations to make the postseason. You could do a 6-man rotation so that whatever innings you can get out of Crochet, some of them are there in October.
But you know, why wouldn't Crochet just be ready to go for 180 in every 5 days at this point? He threw 100
because of his injury history.
I guess so, but the White Sox just did everything that you could ever ask for
to get him, whatever,
to get him to be an every 5-day guy.
Yeah, I mean, they were also like pitching him 2-3 innings a time for the last bits, but
right.
I mean, I don't know. I'm just saying from a, I think they have 6 major league quality starters.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. 2 of them, you know, have injury concerns. 3, really. Walker Buehler. So I think a 6-man rotation makes sense. If there is a 6-man rotation in Boston, the most that you would probably project for any of them would be more like 150 rather than 180.
Right.
So that and then you wouldn't get two start weeks from them and stuff like that. But anyway, long story short, the guy that I like best, according to his draft slot, is Brian Bayo.
Yeah.
Brian Bayo has an above average slider, a changeup that Stuff Plus doesn't like, but the results are great and the eye test is great. So I'm just going to say the changeup is great. And the sinker is above average by Stuff Plus. So that's 3 above average pitches by Stuff Plus. He doesn't have a command problem. He keeps the ball on the ground. yes, I do wish he had a cutter or a four seamer. I think he's probably going to work on that. He started bringing the four seamer back as kind of a show me pitch late last season. I do think there could be one more pitch. If he says, you know, I believe in my four seamer again, or I'm throwing a cutter, I'm going to listen, because that could be the missing piece. But even as is, he's going to be, he has some similarities to the kind of Christopher Sanchez, Sandy Alcantara, like, you know, change up first guys with great sinkers, great velo, you know. Can he add to, like, kind of get out of that group? Maybe. I don't know.
Bayo's someone that I've actually pinned as, like, hey, you seem like that efficient pitcher with what you do. What's interesting monitoring him last year was he never really had all three pitches working at one time. Yeah. It was, he introduced the slider. I was really excited about that, but then the changeup wasn't there. And the changeup got back, but then he couldn't locate the sinker. And it always felt like he was battling something and never really found a moment.
His starts
where
he's
like,
were not super fun to watch. It was
right. It's
like,
an inefficient, but still not walking so many, but it was just felt there was frustration in him executing what he wanted to do, which always has me a little bit off. But at the same time, I'm very much with you of, like, this is the guy that is not really discussed much and could be a very consistent pitcher throughout the year, could take that step and then all of a sudden be like a top 30, top 40 guy, honestly, just based on volume and not being harmful in any category.
Or he could be the guy who gets optioned out. But even if he's the guy who gets optioned out, we just detailed all the injury risk on this roster.
Right.
So he'll still get to maybe 100 innings.
All right, last one. We're going to go quick here. It's not Coffee Cakes, otherwise known as JT Brew Baker. Coffee Cakes. I totally forgot that he was on the team.
That is awful. That is really bottom tier.
Oh, no. Coffee Cakes? That Coffee Cakes is amazing. That's the best nickname I've ever had.
That's terrible.
are you talking about Brew Baker? Okay. We have...
It takes a lot. When you have to explain the joke, it's not good.
No. I don't have to. I just... You got it. It was fine.
I just want
Okay. So of these guys...
You're the most dad young person I've ever met.
Oh man, you can see the gray hair coming in from all the jokes I make. I mean, you could say that Fried could be a sleeper based on where he's going. He's going a little bit lower than I think generally the skills speak to, but there's injury risk, all that, etc. Clark Schmidt's getting more helium, so I wouldn't even say that we can put him there. It doesn't really seem like there's anyone
3.56 ERA, so yeah. You know, it's just a question of innings. If you like him, you should. And
right.
You have IL slots and stuff. I think you should get Clark Schmidt.
So why is Carlos Carrasco your sleeper?
No, actually, one of my top five guys is. And it's the weirdest sleeper for the weirdest reason. Marcus Stroman is my sleeper because I don't think he'll be a Yankee.
Right.
Yep, I think somebody else will take the Yankees offer of having them pay, you know, half of Marcus Stroman's salary, and he'll be like an Athletic and it'll be fine.
And this is actually the same case I'm going to make next week or in 2 weeks with the Arizona Diamondbacks and Jordan Montgomery. So can't wait for that, because someone will get hurt and it stinks, but March is when we see a ton of injuries happen, and all of a sudden you look at the free agency market and you see, okay, there's Nick Pivetta and Jose Quintana. And they go, oh. So then you have to find something else.
And Pivetta wants to replace the $20 million he lost.
Right. That's a good
qualifying offer. And Marcus Stroman, you know, the Yankees are willing to pay half the salary. So it's like, yeah, there's definitely a case there. One thing, I also think Will Warren is not as bad as he looked in his debut.
I agree with that, too. Yeah.
It's basically the Clark Schmidt package. And I think he might have the same issues as Clark Schmidt in finding a way to make it work, you know, and Clark Schmidt had some ups and downs, but, you know, Michael King has shown that it can work. Clark Schmidt is making it work. Hayden Wesenski didn't make it work, but got acquired by a team who thinks they can make it work. So that's the group of pitcher that Will Warren belongs in. And oopsie says a 3.82 ERA, you know, Steamer says 3.72. So Will Warren is like one of those things where, like, he used to have helium, and then he debuted and sucked. And then everyone's like, he sucks. And you're like, it was like, you know, 5 starts in the major leagues. Can we give him another shot, please?
That was such a vicious way of saying he sucks. I was like, oh, God. I felt that in my soul.
You live in New York, dude.
Oh, I know.
Listen to the radio there.
No, but it was, I've gotten that reaction. I've gotten that commentary to me directly. I know it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
But no, I think it's a really good call with Warren. Not really an unbeater. I think he's more of a reliever. And maybe there is something more to it if he had something next time we see him. Alan Winans had his moments against the Mets, which is so funny, but I don't really think that's going to happen much for him. But I think that's a great point about Marcus Stroman. And that's going to do this pod. That's going to do this. What am I saying? Eno, I'm so out of practice.
We're in early season form.
Oh my gosh, we're in spring form. That is going to conclude our first of three series that's talking about SB sleepers. This was the East divisions. We're going to talk about the Central and the West the next two. Eno, what can people expect from you shortly?
I've got a piece right now about Stuff Plus and the impact it's had around the league, including the negative impacts. It also discusses a little bit about the impact it has on dips theory. So I have a quote in there from Voros McCracken, who created dips theory. And that's kind of fun. You got to go look at the new stuff numbers on Fangraphs. They're up. And Jordan Rosenblum is working on, because this new suite has got projections that are like expected home run rates and expected ground ball rates that are being spit out by it. And we're working with Jordan Rosenblum to do something fun with that. So
yeah,
oopsie, was just the beginning.
I know, man. We have with PLV, we have the percentages for every pitch of what we expected the result to be.
There you go.
And we're looking forward to messing around with that stuff. So, the future's coming, you know. It's going to be great. And yeah, you know me, I'm doing my team rotation breakdowns. For those of PL Pro, you can access that. And then my top 400 comes out in about 2 weeks, something like that, like February 17th, something along those lines. So, oh boy, it's another 80,000 worder. Get ready, y'all. I'll make sure it doesn't crash on your phone.
Oh yeah, okay? My rankings are up next week. When are your rankings up next week?
I mean, I have to go through 18 more teams first, so we'll get there. I'm gonna be streaming later today. You can check me on playback.tv/pitcherlist. I'm streaming pretty much the entire time the next 2 weeks to get through all these teams. So that's it for today. On behalf of our wonderful guest, Eno Saris, my gosh, thanks so much for joining me today. This is amazing. My name is Nick Pollock, and we'll talk about the craft of pitching with you again next week.